Okay, here we go. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our first meeting of this ETIM class on Kiddushin Perek Gimel, according to the Rivadim method. And just to give a few minutes of brief introduction for those that have not been with us before, the purpose of our method is to achieve an understanding of pshat in the sugya according to the various layers of the sugya that developed during the period of the Tanaim, the Amoraim, and the Baalei HaSugya, who followed the Amoraim. And the first thing we do is learn the psukim that are relevant to the topic in question. Following that, we study the Perek of Mishnah. After the Perek of Mishnah, we take a brief look at Sosefta and Braita as relevant, and then we go into the sugyot, separating the sugyot according to the layers. Those that are unfamiliar with the method should either listen to the MP recording that Rabbi Kelman mentioned previously, or they can go on to our website, which is www.talmud-rivadim.co.il. Okay, on our topic of Kiddushin, as you all know, Kiddushin is learned by the rabbis, as the Rambam brings down in his first Perek of Hilchot Yishuv, from the Pasuk in Perek Kaf Bet of Sefer Devarim, Ki Kach Ish Shisha Uva Eleha Usnea, that the pasuk seems to relate to a two-step process in marriage, the first being Ki Kach Ish Shisha, and the second Uva Eleha, meaning that there is need for a kinyan before there is marriage. And this, the Rambam says, was a chidush from Har Sinai, because before Har Sinai, marriage was simply the agreement of a man and a woman to be together. He would take her home, have relations with her, and that would create the relationship. But the Torah mandated the need for a kinyan that would have to be done in one of several ways. As mentioned by the first Mishnah in the first Perek of Kiddushin, bekesef, beshtar, or bebiyah, that either by money, by document, or by marital relations. The Rambam, in the first Perek of Hilchot Ishut, describes that shtar and biyah, those two methods of Kiddushin are deoraita, whereas Kesef is derabbanan. There's a great argument among the Nosei Kelim on the Rambam whether the Rambam intended to say that Kesef is derabbanan or not, but we're not going to get into that here. The point is that the purpose of our Masechet is to describe all of the halakot relevant to the act of Kinyan, Isha, and in both in terms of its format, it's both in terms of what has to be said for the kinyan, what materials can be used for the kinyan and what cannot, mistakes or a lack of clarity in the kinyan, etc. The third parak that we are going to be studying opens with the issue of of kinyan by messenger. And from there, goes on to all sorts of issues of lack of clarity in the kinyan, and we will attempt to get as far through the perek in the course of our studies as possible, trying to just first get an impression, what does the perek deal with? So if you have your Mishnayot in front of you, if you have the Gemara in front of you, please open to Perek Gimel of Kiddushin, and let's take a look at exactly what the Perek contains and in what order, and what sense can we make out of the order of the Mishnayot in the Perek. If you take a quick look at the Perek, if you haven't had a chance to look at it before, let's please do it now, and let's follow the Mishnayot in the Perek and see if we can clump the Mishnayot together into groups according to their topic or according to their form. And the first Mishnah, Ha'omer lechaviro, say v'kadesh li isha plonit v'halach v'kitsha le'atzmo mikudeshet, v'chein ha'omer le'isha hareat mikudeshet li le'achar shloshim yom, u'ba acher v'kidesha betoch shloshim yom mikudeshet l'asheni, bat Yisrael le'kohen tochal v'tuma, and the third phrase, me'achshav le'achar shloshim yom, these three cases all deal with a situation where there is some kind of either delay, either by time or by place, in the kiddushin of the woman. Either because it goes by a shaliach who finds the woman in a separate place than the man, or because there's a delay of time, of 30 days, between the statement of kiddushin and its chalot, when it becomes practically effective, or whether there's a doubt in the intention of the man, whether he intends the Kiddushin to apply immediately or whether it will apply only after 30 days. We'll come back to this Mishnah and study it in depth. What we're trying to do now is just scan through and see if we can sort the Mishnayot. Notice then that beginning with Mishnah Bet, we have a series of cases that deal with conditions related to the Kiddushin. Ha'omer la'isha, ha'rei at mikudesh li almanat she'etein lach 200 zuz, and then almanat she'etein lach mikan v'yad 30 yom, almanat she'yesh li 200 zuz, or almanat she'areich 200 zuz. Where the man is making the Kiddushin conditional on a certain amount of money that's being processed as part of the Kiddushin. And Mishnah Gimel just continues the same string of cases. Almanat sheyesh li beit kor afar, almanat sheyesh li b'makom ploni, almanat she'areich beit kor afar, etc. So Mishnah Bet and Mishnah Gimel are a unit. They discuss conditions that the man is putting on top of the act of Kinyan. But when we get to Mishnah Dalet, we get a completely different kind of Mishnah. The Mishnah Dalet says, Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Tanai She'enu Ketanai B'nei Gad U'B'nei Ru'uven Eno Tanai, and Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel is Cholek on Rabbi Meir. And these two Tanaim from the Usha generation, that is, immediately after Churban Beitar, are debating the applicability of Tanaim based on the form of the Tanai that the husband says. Does it have to be a double condition? If this, then this. If not that, then that. Or can it even be a single-sided condition? This is a very interesting machloket, and it would seem at first blush that it should be coming at the beginning of the perek that discusses the Tanaim and Kiddushin, because it deals with the very nature of what a Tanai is. Why does the Mishnah bring examples of different Tanaim before it brings the machloket, the ekronit, the basic argument about what a kind of a Tanai is effective? But as we know from our previous lessons, this is the way of Rebbe in other places in the Mishnah to bring examples before he brings general principles. For instance, in Masechet Shabbat, he brings six prakim of examples of Hotza'ah, Mirushut L'Rishut, and only in Perek Zion does he get around to presenting the Ekronot that they're of Klal Gadol Amru B'Shabbat, and that there are 39 Malachot on Shabbat. And similarly, in Masechet Gittin, we have eight chapters of all sorts of detail regarding the giving of a get, and only in chapter 9 do we have the basic rules, the Machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, about when a man can give his wife a get in general. And on those general principles, the rest of the Masechet is based. So it appears that Rebbe has a way of giving some specific halachic information, and then reverting to the machloket that relates to the general principle. After Mishnah Dalet, we have a change in topic as well. In Mishnah He, we have and Mishnah Vav, we have the husband putting conditions on the kiddushin that may or may not be effective. Not like in the previous case where he says Harei mikudesh li almanat she'etein lach 200 zuz. That's an effective tonight. It's only a question of what form it should be in. But in Mishnah Hey, we have the man giving all sorts of excuses. She's not Mikudesha to me because I thought she was a Kohenet and she's a Leviyah. She's a Leviyah and I thought she was a Kohenet. Where the problem with the Kiddushin relates to his understanding of the relationship, not to the actual Kiddushin itself. And similarly, if he says to her, he puts a Katnai on the Kiddushin that is dependent upon other people. He says that she'll be Mikudeshetim after he converts or after she converts, after he is freed from slavery or after she is, after her present husband dies. That's an interesting condition. And all of these things do not create Kiddushin because, prima facie, the fulfillment of these conditions are not in his control. They're not in his hand. And that distinguishes them from the conditions that were mentioned earlier in the Perek. When we get to Mishnah Vav, we have similar things as well, where the man says to the woman that he's going to that she'll be mikudeshet him if he does a certain act of protection for her with the government, or if her father agrees or his father agrees, things that are not dependent upon him, but dependent upon others. And this serves as a connection to the next group of Mishnayot, Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, Yud and Yud Aleph, which all deal with problems that result from a confusion in who is the woman who is Mit Kadeshet, the mother, the daughter, the sister, did the father accept Kiddushin, did he not accept Kiddushin, etc. So Zayin through Yud Aleph is a group, is a clump of Mishnayot. Mishnah Yud Bet changes the topic again and tells us that any kind of Kiddushin, that whether it has, whether it's done legally or illegally, based on the arayot that are permitted and not permitted to marry, that will impact on the quality or the effectiveness of the Kiddushin. And Mishnah Yud Gimel is attached to that, discussing the status of Mamzerim. So Yud Bet and Yud Gimel are also a clump, a kovetz, as it were, of Mishnayot. So our perek basically divides into several groups of Mishnayot. We have Mishnah Aleph, which stands more or less on its own. Then we have Mishnah Bet and Mishnah Gimel, which form a mini group. Mishnah Dalet stands on its own. Then we have Mishnah He and Mishnah Vav, which stand on their own. Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, and Yud Aleph are a group. And then Yud Bet and Yud Gimel are a group. And what Rebbe seems to have done here is collected these groups of Mishnayot, either from various Batei Midrash, and sewed them together, which he does often in many Masechtot, or else he himself is organizing his perek in these different clumps of Mishnayot based on their topic. Is this clear? Does anyone have any questions about the structure of the perek before we move on further? Does anyone, do you all hear me? I'm not hearing any response from anyone.
Yeah, fine.
It's understood? Okay, let's take a look then. Let's go back to that first Mishnah and study it in depth. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the Perek, contains three cases. And these three cases deal with a break in the communication between the man and the woman, either by place or by time. The Mishnah says, Ha'omer lechaviro, a person appoints his friend and says, say the Kadesh li'isha plonit, go and effect kiddushin for me with a certain woman. Behalach the kichale atzmo mikudeshet, and his friend goes and finds the woman, takes a look at the woman, and says, "Oh, I must save my friend from this woman," and so he decides to be mikudesh her for himself. And the Gemara said, and the Mishnah says, mikudeshet, that she actually is mikudeshet to the friend and not to the one who sent him. Why? Because the woman was unaware of any offer of kiddushin from the original, from the originator of the offer. All she knows is the man that's standing in front of her is offering her kiddushin, and she accepts it. And therefore, there's very clear communication between the second individual and the woman, and there is no communication between the first individual and the woman, and therefore, the kiddushin is fine. The second case in the Mishnah adds a complication of time. V'chein ha'omer la'isha, Hareyat mikudeshet li le'achar shloshim yom. A man says to a woman that he wants to offer kiddushin on a delayed reaction, that it'll be effective only in 30 days. And in the meantime, uba acher v'kicha betoch shloshim mikudeshet lashini. But in the middle of those 30 days, when she is still really a bachelor, she's a spinster, then she's single, then a second man comes and offers her kiddushin. And the Mishnah tells us that she's mikudeshet to the second man, because at the moment when he offers her kiddushin, she is still available, she's single, and when she accepts kiddushin from him, then she becomes mikudeshet to him, so that it actually precedes the kiddushin that the first man offered her, which is effective only several days later. So she's mikudeshet to the second man. What do these first two cases have in common? Who would like to suggest?
The any delay in the kiddushin doesn't affect a change in the woman's status.
Okay, that's true. And also, in both cases, to whom is the woman mikudeshet?
First one to offer.
So the one who offers her a realizable offer at the moment. In both cases, mikudeshet lasheni, mikudeshet or to the chaver in the first case, or mikudeshet to the second man in the second case. But in either event, the first one to offer is cut out of the picture because the intervening second person. And it is such a clear kiddushin in the second case that we're dealing with that the Mishnah remarks, Bat Yisrael Kohen tochal b'truma, that even if she is a Bat Yisrael and the second man who is Makadisher is a Kohen, the kiddushin is strong enough to allow her to eat truma from him. There is no doubt whatsoever about the kiddushin. The third case presents another wrinkle in this arrangement. The man says to her, Me'achshav uli'achar shloshim yom. The original man who's Makadishar says, you're mikudeshet to me from now and after 30 days. And we don't know what his intention is. Does he mean that the kiddushin will be effective from now, from today? Or does he mean that the kiddushin will be effective only in 30 days, and he's changed his mind from the word me'achshav? Or did he mean, my offer is from achshav, but it will only be effective in 30 days? We don't know what he means. And therefore, the Mishnah tells us, uba acher v'kitsha betoch shloshim yom, and if now a second man comes and offers her kiddushin during these 30 days, when we do not know her status with the first man, then mikudeshet v'ina mikudeshet. She is doubtfully mikudeshet to this second man, because if the first man intended his offer only to be effective 30 days, after a 30 days delay, then she's still single and she can accept kiddushin from the second man. But if, on the other hand, the first man intended that his offer of kiddushin should be effective immediately, then when the second man came, the woman is not single. He cannot offer her kiddushin. So her status is that of being safik mikudeshet. She's mikudeshet v'ina mikudeshet to the first man. Bat Yisrael a Kohen, and therefore if she is marrying the first man as a Kohen, O Bat Kohen li Yisrael, lo tochal bitruma, and therefore she will have no right to eat truma in either direction, either if she's a Bat Yisrael marrying a Kohen, or if she is a Bat Kohen marrying a Yisrael, because in either case, it's going to, because she's in Safek, we say Safek to Oraita l'chumra. And therefore, we're machmeran here, and we do not allow her to eat the truma. So what we come up with from this Mishnah are three cases of increasing levels of doubt. In the first case, we say there really is no doubt whatsoever because she only had contact with the second man. In the second case, she had contact with two. But we don't have a doubt that she's mikudeshet the second because the first man's kiddushin was time lapsed. And in the third case, it's even more complicated because she may be mikudeshet to the first or to the second. And therefore, we have a complicated set of circumstances that require elucidation by the Gemara. Are there any questions so far on what we've done here? Before we go into our first sugya. There are no questions? Let me ask you this. From what Tanaitic layer is this Mishnah? Someone like to suggest?
Stam Mishnah, so we say Stam Mishnah Rabbi.
What do we have a layer in, represented by name in this Mishnah?
Not by name.
No, we have no layer represented by name, and therefore what do we call this?
Stam Mishnah.
We call this Stam Mishnah, that's right. Not Tanakama, because Tanakama is only when you have an anonymous opinion in argument with a minority opinion that's named. This is Stam Mishnah, and that means there was no argument about it. Rebbe brings it as a unanimous position. However, You know that Stam Mishnah can be from one of two periods. It can either be very early, as we find it at the beginning of Gittin or at the beginning of Kiddushin, and then there are later layers on top of that, or Stam Mishnah can be very late. It can be from the time of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Atzmo, where he brings the unanimous decision of the Beit Midrash before he brings other material. Sometimes he can bring a Stam Mishnah and then he can do a flashback to earlier generations. And if Eitan Diamond is hearing me, that's similar to what we discussed by email last evening on the wonderful question that your son asked. In any event, this is a Stam Mishnah, and we don't know whether it's early or late at this stage. Maybe something will come up in the course of the Sugyot or in our analysis of Breitot or Tosefta as we go through. Okay, are there any questions on this? Or
can you explain what you mean by layers? Maybe I missed it because my computer went kablooey, but what do you mean by layers?
Okay, who's speaking?
He's Raul from Passaic, New Jersey.
Hi, okay. Layers in Mishnah means that many times in the Mishnah, you'll have sections of a given Mishnah brought down in the name of a certain Tana. From a certain historical layer, for instance, Tanaim from Yavne, or Tanaim from Usha, or Tanaim from Tzipori, and these layers represent stages in the development of the halacha in the Mishnah as the generations pass. So in our Mishnah, there are no named layers. It's all an anonymous Mishnah, and therefore it's Stam Mishnah. The question is whether it's an early Stam Mishnah or a late Stam Mishnah.
Could it be a composite of several layers?
I heard a voice, but it was very weak. Is that you? I'm Mr. Emerson from Toronto.
Yes, it's Stanley Emerson in Toronto. I hope you can hear me better. My question is whether we would examine the Mishnah, or there are cases where one would examine the Stam Mishnah to determine whether there are several layers, or whether our method does not take that doesn't take things that far.
Okay, if I understood your question correctly, Mr. Emerson, you're asking whether we can identify layers even within a Stam Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah. If that is your question, the answer is sometimes you can. For instance, in the first Mishnah in Kiddushin, you have a Stam Mishnah, which is then followed by a Machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, and then there's another anonymous statement which is discussing the value of a pruta according to Italian coinage, and no name is brought on that line. It's just brought anonymously, but because it relates to a certain point of realia, like a Roman coin, we can date it. In a case like that, we can actually come to layers within the Stam Mishnah, or if you find one piece of Stam Mishnah that comments interprets an earlier piece of Mishnah, then you can find layers. But in our case, in this case here, in the first Mishnah in Paragimel of Kiddushin, we have three cases that all that are a set, and they all go together. And there are no commentary layers or realia layers in this Mishnah, and therefore I don't detect any layers in this Mishnah. Are there any other comments?
By the way, if you want to know who's speaking, you'll see on the bottom of every box a blue bar gets lit up. The gray goes to blue, and then you know who's speaking.
Yes, okay, that was Israel. That was Israel speaking just there?
See how my bar becomes blue under my box? That's how you know it's me.
Yes, very good. Okay, thank you. Now, Eitan Diamond is asking, is it possible that the phrase, Bat Yisrael Kohen, is a later insertion to clarify the second case? Eitan, thank you. That's a very interesting remark, what you're suggesting. You're actually suggesting it not only about the second line of the second case, you're also suggesting it about the last line of the Mishnah, Bat Yisrael Kohen, or Bat Kohen Yisrael Lo Tocha B'Truma, because whatever you'll decide about one of those lines will be true for the other as well. And although it is possible to suggest that, but I'm not sure it's very convincing, because it is the absolute acid test of the implication of whether the Kiddushin is good or not. and therefore would seem to me to be an integral part of the Mishnah. But you're right that a he'arah like that could definitely be a later for a layer. For instance, in the first Mishnah of Brachot, you have, and in the third Mishnah of Brachot, you have a case like that, where you have an anonymous question, Im kein lama amru chachamim ad chatzot, or Im kein lama ne'amar b'shoch b'chad kumecha, where those are seem to be later comments on earlier material, and that's that they're anonymous. So it that the phenomenon that you're suggesting does exist, Eitan, but I'm not sure that it's the case here. But it could be. How would we determine this? Can any of you think of a way that we could actually determine whether these are later additions onto the Mishnah or not? Where can we check?
Are there subtle changes in the are there subtle changes in the Hebrew, perhaps, in the language or the dialect?
Okay, well, that's possible, but here there aren't. Where else can we look? If we want to check to see the sources of a Mishnah, where can we look?
Not carry out a comparison with the Tosefta to see if there's a parallel text and to see what it says.
That's correct. Well done, Mr. Emerson. That's right. That Mishnah has to be seen in light of the total Tanaitic literature, which includes Baraitot that are brought in the Bavli and the Rishalmi, and the Tosefta. And if we look in these places, sometimes we'll find in Mishnah like this that a line which is anonymous in our Mishnah is attributed to a specific Tana in the Tosefta or the Baraita. And that will help us understand the sources from which Rebbe edited his Mishnah. In our case, however, since I've done this check in advance of this lesson, and there is no such indication from the Tosefta or the Baraita that any of these lines can be attributed to a given specific Tana, we don't have any help from there either. But that was the correct suggestion. That is the way that we would check it out from a method point of view. Okay, let's take
a
look.
Just ask, when you say you're looking at Braitot, these would be Braitot that are scattered throughout Shas?
Braitot that are, yes, not Shas Bavli and Shas Yerushalmi. That's correct. Okay, do you all have the material that I sent you in front of you? You have the PDF of the first sugya? Okay, if you take a look at it, and you'll excuse that here and there's a problem with spacing of some of the words, but if you take a look at it, what is the first thing we need to do when we look at a sugya? What is the first determination that we have to make?
What are the layers chronologically?
Yes. How do we do that? How do we determine what the layers are in the sugya?
I guess maybe by the names of the people who are speaking?
Very good. By the names of the people that are speaking. First, and we do that because the first thing we want to establish is whether or not our sugya is an Amoraic sugya, or whether it's a Shakta Vitarya, a Stama sugya. What's the difference between these two? An Amoraic sugya is a sugya, of course, that developed during the Amoraic period and has the Amoraim in the sugya presented in chronological sequence in the vast majority of cases. A Shakta Vitarya sugya is a sugya that developed after the period of the Amoraim and brings the Amoraim in as quotations, but the context is to be found in the Shakta Vitarya itself. And we've explained this in detail in our previous lessons, and we won't go into it more than that here, except just this is a reminder to you about how we do this. Now, why do I want to establish whether it's an Amoraic sugya or a Shakta Vitarya sugya? Because that will tell me what I'm to learn first. If it's an Amoraic sugya, I'm to learn the Amoraim first and then learn the Shakta Vitarya as a commentary. And if it's a Shakta Vitarya sugya, then I'm to learn the sugya according to its order, the order of its being printed, because it's like a lecture. So in our case, we're going to take a look at this sugya, and we're going to scan it, and we're going to see who are the Amoraim who participate here. And then we're going to ask, what kind of a sugya is it? If we determine that it's an Amoraic sugya, then we have to subdivide it again into different types of Amoraic sugyas, as Eitan suggested in his note, whether it's natural or edited. But we'll get, that's the second step. So who appears in our sugya here, in the first sugya? Even those of you without a microphone can still, in the chat box, put your answers.
If you mean in the Mishnah, are we still talking about the Mishnah? Because there's no names.
No, we're talking about the the sugya. Who appears in the sugya? Any suggestions?
There are no names in the sugya.
There are no names in the sugya? Go a little further.
Ravin.
Do you see Ravin Chasida?
Yes, yes.
Ravin Chasida is on line 3 of the setup Gemara that I sent you. And if you look in line 5, you have another Amora. Rabba Bar Barchana. And then if you go further in the sugya, on line 7, you'll see a number of Amoraim mentioned. Rav Gidel, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Zera, Rav Yitzchak Napacha. Who are all of these Amoraim, and when did they live? So if one looks them up, has anyone had a chance to look them up and prepare them? Do you know who they are?
I just received a sheet this morning, so no, I have no idea.
Okay. These Amoraim are mentioned in chronological sequence here, because Rabbi Chasida and Rabbi Bar Chana are second generation Amoraim. Well, the Amoraim brought in the third, in line 7, are all from the third generation, some from Bavel and some from Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, what can we conclude about this cycle of sugya? What kind of sugya is this? Come, ladies and gentlemen.
Amoraim.
Shakal Vertaria.
Okay, if the Amoraim are in order, then it's an Amoraic sugya. If the Amoraim are not in order, it's a Shakta Vataria Stama sugya. So what kind do we have here?
Amoraic.
Amoraic sugya. Because this is an Amoraic sugya, we then will learn what will we learn first?
First people first.
We will learn the Amoraim first, and then we'll learn the Shakta Vataria that developed on top of those Amoraim afterwards. So let's do that. Let's learn the parts that are in red on the PDF that you received, lines 3, 5, and 7. And let's see what they are and what they have to do here on our Mishnah. Because every time you look at a sugya on a Mishnah, you have to establish, why is the sugya here? The Babylon Talmud was edited from tens of thousands of sugyot that existed at the time of the period of the Amoraim and at the end of the Amoraim in the Balei HaShakta Vataria. And the editors of the Gemara, whether they were Rav Ashi and Ravina in Generation 6 or Rav Asi and Ravina Bar Rav Huna in Generation 8, as Rav Shrivla would say, in any event, those who edited the Bavli filed the sugyot on specific Mishnayot for specific reasons. Everything in the Gemara is in perfect order. So when we learn a sugya or a series of sugyot on the Mishnah, we need to ask ourselves, what is the logic in the filing of these sugyot on this specific Mishnah? So let's take a look at the Amoraim and see why they might be filed here. In line number 3,
may I ask
we
a
have
question?
Ravin Chasida. Yeah, sure.
You may have mentioned this, but this PDF we're looking at, underneath the Mishnah, that all that stuff that follows with the numbering, is that basically Gemara? Because I've never seen it in this format before, that's why I asked.
Yeah, if you notice after the Mishnah, there's a word Gemara, And then the rest is that follows is numbered. So this format, the numbering, just tells you what are the steps of the sugya as it appears in the Vilna. Step 1, step 2, step 3, and then the steps are subdivided into Aleph, Bet, Gimel. And the Aleph, Bet, Gimel can be then subdivided into tertiary divisions of 1, 2, 3. Just to enable us to focus on specific lines in the steps of the sugya as it goes. That's the numbering system. The colors and the fonts represent different periods. The blue represents Tanaim, the red represents Amoraim, and the black represents the Shakta Vitarya. So if you see there that we have three Amoraic pieces, 3, 5, and 7, and all the rest of it is black, that is, it's Shakta Vitarya, with the exception of a very short Braita at the top of the Sugya, which we're going to get back to in a little while. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thanks.
Okay. All right, so on line 3, Rabin Chatzida Azel Likadoshe Le Itata Lebre Kid Shala Nafshe. It's a story. It's an Amoraic story, which about Rabbi Avin, the Chassid, who went to be Mekadesh, a woman, for his son, Kidsha L'Nafshe, but he ended up being Mekadesh her to himself. What is this story doing here in our sugya? What is its connection to our Mishnah?
It's an illustration of the first concept in the Mishnah.
Yes. The first case in the Mishnah is exactly this, that a man sends his friend to be Makadish someone, and the friend is Makadisher to himself. In this case, Ravin Hasida went to be Makadish for his son and changed his mind as Makadish the woman for himself. We don't know whether he was acting as Shaliach of his son, or whether he was initiating the contact and just simply changed his intention. We don't know much more about this story, but it seems very odd. It seems very odd because why would Ravin Chasida change his mind and instead of being Makadish this woman for his son, be Makadish her for himself? So we have an open question here, which the Gemara will help us understand when we get to the level of the Shakta Vitarya. Let's do line number 5. Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Yahev Le Zuze Le Rav. Amar, Zvana nihali lahai ara, avdal zvana lanapshe. Rabba Bar Bar Chana gave money to Rav, and he said to him, "Please, when you happen to be in that certain place, buy this piece of land for me." So Rav went and bought it for himself. What is this story doing here?
Well, it's not a matter of condition, but it's a similar type of, it's a parallel exercise in making a kinyan.
Right, that's right. In other words, it's similar in its in the form of the story and the line of the story. The narrative is similar to what we had in number 3, but instead of dealing with kinyan isha, it's dealing with kinyan karkaot. Now go down to line 7. Rav Gidel hava mehapech behahi ara. Rav Gidel was checking out a certain piece of land, presumably to buy it. Azal Rabbi Abba zvana. Rabbi Abba went and bought it out from under him. Azal Rav Gidel kivalei l'Rabbi Zera. Rav Gidel went and filed a complaint against Rabbi Abba with Rabbi Zera. Azal Rabbi Zera ukvalei l'Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha. Rabbi Zera went and passed the complaint on to the Gadol Ador, Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha, in Tveria, in Israel. Because as you know, Rabbi Zera left Babel and went to settle in Tveria to learn from Rabbi Yochanan. Amarle, so Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha said to Rabbi Zera, Hamatein ad sheya'ale etzleinu l'regel. Just wait, because Rabbi Abba is going to come up aliyah l'regel to Israel, and when he comes to the Beis Medrash in Tveria, we'll catch him and have a talk with him about this incident. Kisalik, when he went up, when Rabbi Abba went up, Ashkeche, Rabbi Yitzchak Mepacha indeed found him, put his hand on him, and said to him, Amarle, Ani mehapech becharara, uba acher unetala himen umay. If a person is checking out a certain charara, a certain cake, as it were, and someone else comes and takes it from him, what's the din? Amarle. So Rabbi Abba answered, Nikra Rasha. He's considered an evil person for doing such a thing. So Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha in 7 Dalet says to him, Ve'ela mor mai ta'ama avad hachi. So then why did you do such a thing? Why did you take the land out from underneath Rabbi Abba? Amarle. So Rabbi Abba answered, Lo hava yadana. I didn't know. I didn't know that he was looking at that piece of land. How was I to know? I bought a piece of land that I was interested in. I didn't know someone else was already looking at it. So Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha says, okay, if you didn't know, hashta name nitva nihalemor. If that's the case, then maybe you should give it to him. Let him take it from you. Amarle. So Rabbi Abba answers him, zabone lo mizab nenala. Dera'a kamaitahi velo misamna milta. Says, I'm not prepared to sell it because it's not a very good thing to sell the first piece of land that you buy. Ibai, but if he wants, bimatana nishkale, he can have it as a present. Look at the midot of Rabbi Abba. He's not prepared to sell it, but he's prepared to give it as a gift, to take the entire loss because of the mistake. Rav Gidl lo nachitla. Rav Gidl refused to take the land as a present because of what it says, as the Stama tells us from Mishle, Sone Matanot Yichyeh. Rabbi Abba lo nachitla. Rabbi Abba would not use the land, Mishum dehapich ba Rav Gidl, because he knew that Rav Gidl was looking for it and wanted it, so he didn't want to use it himself. Lo mor nachitla, velo mor nachitla, umitkarya ar ado Rabbanan. And since neither one wanted to use it, it became known as the rabbi's land, maybe some sort of public usage. What is this third story doing here on this Mishnah?
This seems to be illuminating us as to the meaning of the second Mishnah, or the second idea in the Mishnah.
Why? Why the second idea in the Mishnah?
Because somebody's planning on doing something in 30 days, and another person comes in the middle and does it for himself. So similar to the case of saying to the woman, I'll marry you in 30 days, and then somebody else comes along in the meantime.
Yes, but Israel, their cases are very different, because in Kiddushin, in the Mishnah, you have a set time frame. The woman knows exactly when she's going to be Mikudesha to the man in 30 days. In the case we have in this third story, it's open-ended. Rav Gidl made no commitment to the land, and the owner of the land made no commitment to him of any kind. But this third story comes as part of a series of three. We have three stories in the Gemara. Do you see that? The third story, is it more connected to the first story, to the second story? And why? The first story dealt with Ravin Chaspida, who went to be Makadish, a woman for his son, and was Makadish to himself. The second story was about Rabba Barbarchana, who gave money to Rav, and Rav bought the land for himself instead of buying it for Rabba. The third story talks about two rabbis who had a difficulty over a certain piece of land. So the third story is connected more to the first story or to the second story? No, ladies and gentlemen, what do you say? The third story is more connected to the second story, is it not? Because it deals with land. It deals with a land transaction, as does the second story. So what we have in the Gemara is a series of three stories, and they are connected to each other because in each one of them there was a misunderstanding about who the acquisition should be made for. In the first case, Rabin Chasida acquired the woman for himself instead of his son. In the second case, Rav acquired land for himself instead of for Rava. And in the third case, Rabbi Abba acquired the land that was being checked over by Rav Gidda. Now, these three stories are a kovetz. You remember that we studied about kvatzim in Mishnah. This is a kovetz in the Gemara. This is what we call a kovetz amorai, an amorei kovetz. And this is a self-standing unit. Now, what is this unit being doing here in a sugya in Kiddushin when two out of the three stories don't deal with Kiddushin at all? They really should more be placed in Bava Batra, or in the last prakim of Bava Metzia. So what is it doing? What are they all three doing here? Why was this kovetz not divided up into its three pieces and the first story filed here on our Mishnah and the last two stories filed where they belong? That's right. Eitan Diamond responds from Toronto. That's how they memorized them. The Amoraim memorized these stories the same way they memorized Mishnayot and Braitot. And these three stories were memorized together because they were connected. When it came time to decide where these stories were to be filed as a sugya in the Gemara, then the result was that it was filed here in Kiddushin on this Mishnah because the first story of the three in the Gemara deals with Kiddushin, and just like our Mishnah. And as we know from our study of Kvatzim in Mishnah, Kvatzim are filed based on their first member and how it joins together with the preceding context. And that's what we have here. That's why these three stories...
Excuse me, this is Benjamin Weiss from Thornhill. Isn't there also the connection with land that the Gezerah Shava of Kicha Kicha Mr. Ephron, wouldn't that also be a reason why these two could be linked?
So what you're asking is that because in at least in some Midrashei Halakha of Chazal, we learn Kiddushei Kesef from Kicha Kicha Mr. Ephron, from a real estate transaction, that therefore there is a built-in relationship between acquisition of the relationship with a woman and acquisition of land. That's a very interesting suggestion that you're making. There's of course no way to determine whether that was the reason why these three stories were put together, but you might suggest that because since the Amoraim had in their background from the Braitot that they were aware of this connection between Kiddushin and Kinyan Sadeh, that therefore it was fertile ground, as it were, for the collection of these three stories together and their placement here. It's an interesting suggestion and worthy of consideration. Our time is almost up, says our timekeeper. What I'd like to do is give you a bit of homework to do before our next meeting next Sunday, when I will have the pleasure of broadcasting to you from Toronto. I'd like you to go back over this sugya now, over the week, and study the Shak Levitarya on the sugya, and try and determine what is the Shak Levitarya adding onto this sugya that is not evident in the stories of the Amoraim themselves. Because, after all, these three stories have now become embedded in a larger context of the Shak Levitarya for a certain specific purpose or lesson. So try to figure out what that lesson is, and what the lesson is based on, and we'll put the whole sugya together when we meet again a week from today. It was a pleasure meeting with you, and just in case that any of you have questions or comments that you'd like to make in the course of the week, you can write to me at bonaych, B-O-N-A-Y-I-C-H, at the numbers 012.net.il, and we'll correspond during the week before we meet again. Thank you very much for joining us, and Rabbi Kelman, I return the podium to you.